listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to today's episode of LA Talk Radio, Your Ultimate Life, Your Ultimate Life. You know, I was having a conversation with somebody a little bit earlier about an interesting topic, leadership. And last week, you remember, we had Stephen McGee of McGee Leadership on, and he is a leadership guru, coach, author of many, many books, and has worked with many, many people whose names you would recognize, but the names don't really matter. What I want to talk about today, after that intro, you know, we talked about the work that he's doing and a little bit about how he's going to change the planet and by working with leaders. And so what it got me thinking about for this week is just about what leadership is and why that's such a struggle. I mean, right now, this is LA Talk Radio, so it's the United States. As you know, I live in Canada, but my wife and I are both citizens of the United States and Canada, so we pay attention, of course. And we lived in Phoenix for a number of years as well. Right now, there's this huge political mess going on in the United States. And from a Canadian perspective, watching up here, it looks like a mess. It looks like nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody's telling the truth. And it's a disaster. And, you know, it leads one to ask the question, what is leadership? Like, where is leadership really? Because it looks like everybody's just out for their own self-interest and a bunch of other sort of grumpy points of view that, you know, I'm not going to pass judgment on anyone because I'm not trying to be political here, but it just looks like a mess. And that isn't the point of today's conversation. The point of today's conversation about your ultimate life is creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy for yourself. Now, I just interviewed someone earlier today for my podcast, Your Ultimate Life Podcast, and he was talking about leadership, but in the context of financial leadership. And we were talking about what it takes to build wealth for yourself and for those after you, generational wealth, so that people can have their physical needs taken care of. Well, that takes a leadership position. It takes some discipline. It takes some information and so forth. There's three parts. Now, I'm going to talk about 10 points of leadership today. But these 10 points won't make any difference to you at all without three steps. So step one is information. Okay, you might be trying to change your nutrition. So you notice, in fact, I have a client I was talking to earlier today, and he just did this. He was noticing he was tired too much. And so he went and did a full workup on his body and blood work and all the things to see and got a bunch of results. Now, all those results are information. They don't do anything and won't do anything for how he feels, his energy, his ability to work and all the rest, unless there's step two, which is transformation. So the information has to go in and cause something to be different or it's not worth jack. Okay. And the third thing is integration, which is where we take whatever it is we've changed and make it part of the fabric of our lives. I'll give you an example. It's funny. I used to use the word, you know, a lot. Now that, and that's a stop word. Blah, 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 you know, da, 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 you know, da, 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 you know. And people have a habit of using that or any other stop word like that. It becomes irritating or funny or both. Because every time you're listening to them, you know, they say it and they use it a lot. And pretty soon, if you have one of those, it becomes a stop phrase that pops out all the time. And you don't even know, you don't even know that you're doing it. It becomes this automatic thing. So information is, wow, I'm saying this way too much. It's affecting my communication and how I speak. And I, you know, it sounds funny and I want to quit. Transformation is, okay, what do I need to do? So what I did for that situation is I made a firm decision. I'm going to get rid of that. I'm going to end that as a stop word. It's not going to populate my speech. And there's lots of reasons that we use those things. Nervousness, we don't like silence, it just becomes a habit. There's all kinds of reasons. Some people swear like that, right? They say you know, whatever cuss word is their favorite one all the time, and it punctuates the middle and the end of every sentence. Well, changing a habit like that is the same as getting rid of, you know. Step one was affirm the information. It's there. I don't like it. I'm going to change. The transformation is I'm going to notice. I'm going to notice on purpose every time I say that word, and I'm going to change that. And at first I thought, I don't know how to do it because I won't notice it until I say it. That's true. But what happens is you hear yourself say it, and then you notice it. When you pay attention to something, something else happens. You start noticing it earlier and earlier, right after you say it. First, it's, oh, wow, I just said that, you know, last sentence. And then it backs up and backs up. And pretty soon you get to where you know, and you hear it in the middle. And pretty soon it backs up until it's subconscious and you hear yourself approaching the place in the sentence where you do it. And then you're able to quit, whether it's saying, you know, or swearing or anything else, by noticing. This is the power of noticing. So I'm going to talk about 10 points of leadership. And if you want, and that'll be information, if you want to change how you're behaving, how you're creating your life, your ultimate life, your purpose, your prosperity, and your joy using any of these points of leadership, then this is how you do it. Notice whenever you don't do that, and that'll always be after the fact to start with, maybe because you're cleaning up a disaster or because something's not gone the way you want. So notice it. And just noticing it alone with the resolve that you made, I'm going to change this, will allow you to back up until you notice before you act. You notice before the situation. And that might seem strange, but I'm going to tell you a story about how that worked for me. I'm a pianist. I'm a jazz pianist, and I love jazz. And part of jazz is improvisation. Improvisation is the ability to play a free-flowing melody over a set of chord changes. It's different every time. So, you know, you can have blues improv or you can have atonal improv, but just some kind of melodic line over a set of chord changes. When I was in high school, I was beginning my love of jazz. I was in the high school jazz band, and I played trumpet one year, and I played the piano another year, and I loved both of them. And in San Francisco, they have a device called BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit. And that's the train that goes under the bay and up and down both sides of the bay. And it's quite extensive now and moves a zillion people a day. I don't know how many, but lots. And in the days when I was in high school, which was like at least a billion years ago, they were still building some of the stations. And across the bay, there's a town called Concord, California. It's next to Walnut Creek. You know, Walnut Creek's where Little House in the Prairie was. I didn't know that till my wife told me. Joy, my angel. She's on here sometimes. I'll get her on here maybe again next week. But anyway, so in Concord, they were opening the BART station, the Bay Area Rapid Transit Station. And as a celebration, they'd ask our high school to come and play, you know, at the celebration. And so our jazz band got a chance to go play at the BART celebration. And they'd ask other musical acts to be there too, because it was going to go on for a few hours. So we did, and we went, and we played our tunes, and it was fun. And then there was another professional jazz trio or quartet. I don't remember, trio or quartet. And they were going to play some stuff too. And of course, I was very interested in the keyboard player, and they were, you know, a lot more seasoned than I was. And I watched this guy do his thing on the piano, and they were doing some jazz also and some improv. And he was just, I thought, oh, mind-blowingly good. Now, from the perspective of, you know, 50 years later, I don't know how good he was or not, but at the time it was good. Woo! I was excited. And I thought, oh, I would give anything. Like, how does he have any idea to know what to do? And as I began studying jazz, I kept seeing this word, and the word I kept seeing was pre-hearing, meaning hear before. And what I realized with working and working on it for years and practicing and being in other groups and stuff is that as you know a song, you start pre-hearing what is possible. Like, you know, your solo chorus is coming up and you've got 8 or 16 or 32 bars or whatever to play your improv solo. And to start with, you know, it's your turn and you don't know what to do and you feel clumsy and you try to do something and sometimes it works and sometimes it sucks and you don't know, right? And what happens is the more you notice, you focus, you pay attention, that the time that you realize what you could do backs up and backs up and backs up. And pretty soon you're literally in your head hearing possibilities of what I could play. And then it becomes your time to do it. And you have ideas. And so you start somewhere. And the more you do it, the more you can use pre-hearing and the better you get. And then you get to be a really good improviser. And I've noticed that over the years. And so I'm really comfortable with that now. It's also funny because I saw a YouTube video with Eric Clapton on there and someone asked him the same question. So how do you decide what to do for, you know, solos coming up? And he said the same thing, you know, and you know your solo's coming up and, you know, you have 1,000 different ideas for changes and approach and everything go through your mind. And then all of a sudden it's time and you just do something. Well, your ability to do that depends on your pre-hearing, using the jazz idiom as a description. So if you want to change your leadership style, you need to adopt the same thing. I'm going to give you 10, and these are not all the only qualities of leadership, but there's certainly plenty to get started on. Now, when I describe this, I am meaning not leadership in the context of telling people what to do. That's the old model of bosses at work. What I mean is the ability to articulate a vision, to galvanize support, and to lead people in the accomplishment of that vision. Really simple. Articulate, have a vision, articulate a vision, galvanize or gather some support, and then lead people in the accomplishment of that vision. That's leadership. Now, I happen to know someone right now that was just part of the founding of a new group working on mental health. And it was a big Hollywood gala a few days ago that he participated in. And it was all about that. So somebody had a vision of creating a new organization dealing with mental health. I know someone else right now who's in the planning stages of another vision. And that is to handle kids who don't have good upbringing, you know, that go into foster care or into the quote system. The vision there is, you know, some other kinds of housing and a different approach to, you know, how that stuff's handled, as sad as it is. But, you know, the vision is we can handle it better. We can get better outcomes. Okay. Leadership is the ability to have the vision, articulate it, enroll people in that vision, and then lead them toward accomplishing that. So what are the characteristics of someone who can do that? Well, in the typical sort of company or corporate setting, there's bosses and they tell people what to do. That's the old model. I'm not going to talk about that at all. Even in companies where there is a hierarchical structure, an officer, COO, or vice president of this, and directors, managers, supervisors, you know, 3 or 4 layers, whatever it is, and people are used to telling someone what to do, that kind of leadership doesn't work anymore. People want more autonomy. They want to be able to be fulfilled. They want to do something that matters. They want to be connected to the goal and to the outcome. I'm sure you felt that. You don't like just doing something as a cog, you know, a wheel in this massive thing. You like to know what you're building, have a stake in the outcome, maybe have a say about what we're doing to the extent that it's possible. Depends on the size of the organization, the scope of the project. But it feels good to have some input and autonomy. So how do we lead effectively? Create a vision, enroll people in that vision, and then lead someone or group of people toward an outcome. What are the characteristics you need to have, or I need to have to make that happen? Well, I have spent most of my life in leadership positions of one kind or another. Corporate leadership positions, community leadership positions, church leadership positions, and all of those are founded on one thing. The one base is your ability to have exercise personal leadership. I know you've heard that before. That's not a new saying. But what does it mean? It's not complicated. It means your ability to articulate a vision, enroll others, well, in this case, yourself, and then lead yourself to the accomplishment of that vision. If you can't do that, you're going to suck as a leader of others in this day and age. In this time frame, leadership is about enrollment and about motivation. It's about empowerment, vision, hard work, and all those things that we'll talk about as we go through this episode. But the foundation of all of it is your ability to exercise personal leadership. So what does that mean? Well, let's demystify this and make this really simple. Do you have goals? Are they physical fitness goals? Are they financial goals? Are you going to earn a certain amount of money? Are you going to move? Are you going to buy this house? Are you going to change the way you behave in certain situations? Are you going to get some personal habit, swearing or drinking or other things under control? Setting a goal is the beginning of creating that vision. Now, setting a goal of I'm going to quit drinking is quite different than a real vision. Real leadership takes vision. I'm going to lose some weight. That's setting a goal. I'm going to lose 50 pounds. Okay, that's a goal. You can say it. It doesn't mean anything unless how you put fire in the goal is you start with picturing. What do I look like when I've lost 50 pounds? What do I feel like? How do I enjoy the new clothes that I now need? Because everything I've got now no longer fits. So what is the new me? And painting that vivid picture and enjoying that vivid picture is a beginning step in creating a vision of any kind. But again, we're talking here about personal leadership. So I want you, today I'm recording this or broadcasting this, we're in the middle of May. You got about 7 months, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. You got about 7 months until Christmas or New Year's, 7.5 till New Year's. What do you want badly by New Year's that you don't have today? Do you even know? Are you satisfied with just plugging along until it gets here? I hope not. Because you're infinitely creative and you can have anything you want. You're free to be satisfied with what you've got and just keep muddling along. But in your heart of hearts, I know there are things you want. You want different in your life, in your relationship, in your bank account, in your job, in your satisfaction, in the way you behave, in your connection to the divine. There's 100 other areas. So what is different on January 1st for you than it is today? The better you can articulate that, the more you are likely to exercise the personal leadership to get it done. So step one is creating a vision of you in the completed place. With that done, with the sales done, with the promotion, with the money, with the physical shape, creating that vision and doing it powerfully with details and how it feels and the reasons and everything is a beginning first start. Now, personal leadership means you have to enroll yourself in the vision. Now, that might sound redundant and silly. You might say, well, I just articulated the vision. What do you mean enroll myself in the vision? Well, I'll tell you what I mean. I was just having a coaching call with someone, and we were talking about this very thing in a related way, not exactly. But one of the thoughts was, there's this underlying feeling that says, yeah, I know I can plan and I can try, but it's never really going to work. Something's always going to get in the way. Well, you may believe that, but if you do, and if that is the noise that comes up in your head every time you think about, you know, creating this new state, accomplishing this vision through personal leadership, then you're not enrolled in the vision. Enrolled in the vision means you believe in it. You believe that it's possible. You really want it. You believe that it's possible and you're committed to do what's necessary. Anything else is daydreaming. So personal leadership, if you as a leader, or if I as a leader, can't lead myself to the accomplishment of a goal by articulating it clearly, getting personally enrolled and fully committed to making it happen, I won't get there. And fully committed means willing to sacrifice, willing to give up, willing to say no, willing to change some habits, whatever it is, because those are really the same steps that are required if you're a corporate leader or if you're a leader in a volunteer organization or anything else. I remember one of the things I used to love to do was I was a leader in a community theater group. I was the musical director, and we did the musical we did was Grease. We did more than one, but one of them was Grease. You may have seen that movie. In order to get the orchestra and the music and everything done just right, I had to create a vision. The vision was of us doing it well, of thrilling the audience, of supporting the cast, and of making it real. And I had to lead, I had to create that vision. And then I had to enroll all the other musical cast members, which included some singers on stage and stuff. I had to enroll them in that vision. And the vision wasn't just doing it, but doing it really well so we could be proud of it. And then I had to lead us as a group to get to that place. That means rehearsals. That means fixing mistakes. That means being firm about, you know, how it needs, what it sounds like, projecting and being on key and all the rest of the things that make a good musical production. So that's just one example. But your personal commitment to collaborative, service-oriented leadership is key if you're going to lead in today's world. If you're going to try to do the old command and control, it's not going to work. So personal commitment, and the way you demonstrate and develop that is in your own life first, period. And I've spent the most time on that one because that is by far the most important. You can learn the others on the job, but your personal commitment to self-leadership, like if you can't lead yourself in creating the results you want, you're not going to be able to lead anybody else. All right, number two, I've got three words, and they are love, compassion, and humility. Boy, those are antithetical to what we used to think about leaders. Leaders told people what to do, and they were the boss, and they were feared, and everything else. Love, compassion, and humility are far stronger than fear, anger, shouting, and all of the negative stuff. If you're leading something, people know you're the leader. And leading with humility, leading with kindness, leading with invitation, leading with modeling, leading with love is far more powerful. Why do you think the old mode of leading is outmoded? It's failed. People are claiming their own agency and right of self-determination more now than they ever have. And that's rightfully so, because people are more productive when they feel valued. They feel like they're doing something and what they have to offer matters. So love, compassion, and humility, and each one of those is worth talking about, but I combined them so we wouldn't, because I only wanted to talk about 10 things today, and so that they're all related. What is love? Well, love is a choice. You know, it's a squishy romantic feeling, and, you know, it's what mother bears do to protect their cubs, and mother humans and father humans do to protect their kids, too. I'm not talking about that, although that's an example. Love in a leadership role is a choice to behave a certain way. I define love as simply a choice. If I say to you, I love you, what that means is I'm making a committed choice to use my resources, spiritual, physical, emotional, mental, and physical includes financial or whatever, but I've made a choice to use my resources to lift and bless you because I care about you. I care about your success and about your growth. So love is demonstrated by a leader caring about the real growth of the people involved, not just getting the project done, getting it done under budget, and getting the glory. I'm not saying projects are to be ignored or any of those things, because that doesn't work in today's competitive global marketplace. And it doesn't work in your personal life either. If you set a commitment to do something and you just let everything slide, that never works. And then nobody believes you and it all falls apart. So love doesn't mean any of that. Love and compassion simply means how we approach the process of creating a vision, enrolling people in the vision, and then leading them across the goal line. Now, one of the things that's really different, if you think about leaders, Alexander the Great is a famous military leader that was around in, thousands of years ago, and he had astounding military campaigns, you know, unbelievable victories and so forth, but he had a particular leadership style. Today, the generals, the people in charge of the armies, they're in the back. They're in the back and they're in bunkers and, you know, protected and everything else. Alexander the Great led his soldiers into battle at the front. And he rode a particular horse that everybody knew, a very remarkable horse. And he wore a double-plumed helmet. So he was visible and different than everybody else on the battlefield. In other words, every soldier of his own and of the enemy knew who the man in charge was. And he led from the front. And he was never defeated. In other words, he created a vision. He enrolled his troops and he led them. That kind of leadership is powerful, it lasts, and it creates amazing results. Point number three is agency. Agency is one way of describing your right to choose. Now, we love choice. You know, cheese, no cheese. Pickles, no pickles. Green ones or red ones. We like to have choice. We like to have a say in how things go. In a leadership role, there is absolutely a place for inviting, recognizing, and honoring the agency of all of those that are part of your team. That doesn't mean things are done by committee. It doesn't mean that you take a vote and everything's a popularity contest. But agency consists of many parts, and I'll talk about a couple of them. One is the opportunity to have input. And the second one is the opportunity to express what parts of the project someone might believe they're best suited for. I can do that. I can do that. I don't think I'm very good at that part. And maybe something has to happen because nobody's good at that and somebody's got to go learn. But agency is the willingness of a leader to allow those things to be expressed and to take into account where possible the things that people have that are good skills in different areas. I don't mean, again, people hear this kind of stuff and they think, oh, that takes forever. Everything's done by committee. It actually doesn't take any longer at all. Because when you exercise command and control and just order people around, there's resentment, there's negativity, and there are mistakes, do-overs, and things get done slower. So in the end, leadership in the way that I'm describing it is more effective. It's more rewarding, both for the people that are part of the position or part of the team and for the leader. It's just more powerful. So agency, or recognizing our desire and opportunity to choose and make decisions for ourselves as much as possible. And somebody still has to have the last say in the leadership position. But that doesn't mean that you don't draw input and understand what you can do to allow for and to provide for as much exercise of agency as possible. Number four is a skill of listening. Now, that might sound like duh, and it also might sound silly, but I can tell you that it's a complex and deep subject. I just did a masterclass this last Saturday, 3 days. It takes Tuesday, Monday, Sunday, Saturday. Yeah, 3 days ago, I did a masterclass and listening, and we worked on that for 3 hours. So for 3 hours, we explored what listening really is, the difference, the huge difference between listening, hearing, not hearing, fully paying attention, not really paying attention, listening to argue, listening to respond, listening to refute, listening to understand, listening to connect, listening to create rapport. There's many nuances, and as many of these nuances of listening as a leader masters, the better the leader will be. The more loved, the more followed, the more loyalty will be created, the more gets done, and the better the unit functions. Having done it both ways, I learned that the hard way and learned the power that real listening brings to a situation. Incidentally, we've been sort of talking about all of this like it was really in a business context, but I want to stop here, especially at this listening thing, and talk about leadership across every context. Self-leadership. Do you take time to really listen to yourself, listen to your body, listen to your own ideas, listen to the other voices in your head? No, I'm not crazy. Well, maybe I am, but we all have multiple voices. I have a client who used to talk about the committee in his head, meaning all the different voices and argument points that there were considering an activity, a position, an opportunity, et cetera. So listening, learning to listen. If you haven't spent some time, some real time invested on the skill of listening, how you listen, what your goal is for listening, why are you there? What is the purpose of the conversation? If you haven't learned to do that, that might be one of the best investments you can make to create your ultimate life. Here's what I know. If you develop the skill, the real skill of listening, where you learn to understand how you're listening and to control and listen on purpose, you will control every situation that you're in. The listener controls far more about the outcome of a situation than the speaker. I want you to think about that. That's scary. Learning to listen is more powerful than you can possibly imagine. So effort spent in learning to listen without judgment, without thinking, without trying to respond, you know, just listen and then decide why you're listening. What is the purpose of the conversation? What is your desired outcome? You can affect that a lot more by listening than anything else. The fifth point of good leadership is empowerment. Empowerment. I learned that lesson when I was an executive in one position, and we were doing some pretty significant work in an initiative that affected a lot of stakeholders as well as things inside the company. And I had certain ideas about how things ought to happen. In fact, I was the executive in charge. So obviously, and the success of the initiative was my responsibility. The buck stopped right in my face, not somewhere else. So to start with, I, you know, had teams of people, engineers and others, doing different things. And when they would bring, you know, answers to questions or partial things done back to me to talk about or to review, I was busy trying to get them to see that what I had in mind was somehow better. And I tried to do it without command and control, go do this and shut up, but tried to reason with them. What I realized, two things. One is maybe there is more than one way to accomplish a particular thing, okay, and still get to a good outcome. And that was easy. Maybe there's more than one way. That was easy compared to the second one, which is, when is good enough good enough? And so I learned to ask myself this question. When they would bring to me some policy document that described what we were going to do, I would ask this question: will it work? Will it work? Will what they are proposing work? Will it solve this problem and cause the outcome? And if the answer was, yeah, probably will, then that's enough. The fact that I had a different idea or would tweak it this way or that way, that stopped mattering. Okay, will it work? It's so important, because if you take away, if you do not empower people to make their own decisions, to make their own contribution, you know, and do something valuable, but all they are is gophers, carrying out what you have told them to do. You won't develop loyalty. You won't develop people's skills. You won't have people who want to, you know, follow you to the ends of the earth or any of that fun stuff because they have no investment in it. If you accept their ideas and suggestions and designs and things, then you develop a completely different set of relationships. Now, again, I'm not saying accept something that isn't up to speed. Will it work? Meaning, will it satisfy all of the requirements, the design requirements of the situation? And if it will, learn when to say, that's fine, let's do that. Number six in leadership is the word development. As much as you like to think so, you're not going to be around very long in any particular project. Maybe your position lasts the length of a project. Maybe you have a position in a company and there's going to be more projects. Regardless, a few years and you're gone anyway. Maybe you'll get promoted. Maybe you'll get sick. Maybe you'll get fired. Maybe you'll die. Maybe you'll get bored and move on to a different line of work. So the development of people underneath you, I don't even like the word underneath, but who are part of your team, the development of those is not an accident. It is an intentional, focused process. And engaging in that intentional focus process creates more loyalty, creates better outcomes, and it is the right thing to do besides. Even if you develop people to be completely superior to you, right? Every student should excel and exceed the master who taught them. Now, again, I've been describing this as if it were in a company setting. But I want to now, again, like we did with agency, move back to a personal setting. If you have kids or you work in a volunteer position in your church or community, the development opportunity is huge and is serious. Like, why wouldn't you make it a priority to develop everyone you can? As much as you can. The only reason a person wouldn't do that is they're afraid. They're afraid someone will outshine them. They're afraid for their own position, their own security. And that is not only selfish, but sad. Our goal as leaders, leadership, whether it's in your family or you teach run a Boy Scout troop or you teach music lessons or you have, you know, corporate responsibilities of any size, you are responsible intentionally to make the most out of the potential of those in your team. Making the most means understanding their gifts, talents, and skills, and then intentionally leveraging them so that they can do more than you imagined, more than they thought possible. That development is a hallmark, one of the key hallmarks of a real leader in any context, whether it's a leader in a family or a leader in an organization or volunteering in the community. Your ability and willingness to engage in intentional development and growth is a critical mark of a powerful leader. Number seven is vision. Vision, we talked about in the beginning when I said, what is leadership? It's the ability to conceive and articulate a vision, enroll people in that vision, and then lead them in the accomplishment of that objective. Develop your ability to describe a vision in detail. Painting pictures with words is a skill. Maybe you need diagrams, or maybe you can do it all with words. But nothing is more frustrating than half-baked vision. I talk to people as a coach. I talk to people a lot, obviously. I meet new people every week. And often I'll ask a simple question. Okay, we're having this conversation. I'm a coach. You want to get somewhere, do something, create a business, make more money, change your life in some way. Like, you want something and you're exploring whether or not I can help you or you need any help at all. And what I find is it is so difficult for people to clearly articulate what they're trying to do. There's vague notions of, well, I want to help people and I want to make money and I want to. And by the description, it's clear, that the ideas are only vaguely formed. And because they're vaguely formed, it's impossible to enroll someone powerfully in that vision is if I say some squishy words, even though I say them powerfully and energetically, it would be really simple for you to understand them in a completely different way. I could say, focusing on one of the conflicts in the world today, I want to solve the, I'd love for there to be peace and solve the issues in the Middle East and bring peace to that region. Well, one person is going to hear that to have one side win and the other side, someone else is going to hear it with the other side win. And the third point of view is some, you know, middle ground and negotiated settlement and all the areas in between. So your ability to articulate a clear vision is an essential element of leadership. And for you to articulate it, you have to have it. Now, this is a stumbling block for a lot of people. They are afraid to stake a claim. This is what I think. Now, you're free to change your mind, but it is far easier to change your mind and move from a clearly stated position than it is from fuzzy messes. So if you're going to be a leader, self-leadership, family leadership, community leadership, or corporate leadership, clearly articulating a vision is a key, essential piece of enrolling yourself, self-leadership, enrolling others, and getting the thing accomplished. And when you have clear vision, you can almost accomplish anything. When I run coaching groups, we start there. What do you actually want? And we drill down until I can say it back to them and they can say it to me. And it is crystal clear what the goal is. The eighth one is should be obvious, but the eighth piece of leadership is hard work. Often people have the idea that the leader sits around and watches work be done. Wrong. Sometimes the leader pitches in and actually does things. I've done that, but quite often my role as leader was to do two things: to make sure all the material, whether it's tangible material, intellectual property, or whatever was needed, and to remove obstacles. So source the materials needed and to get obstacles out of the way, run interference, you know, clear objections, get things solved that were not within the ability of the team members to solve. That is a powerful, important, and time-consuming role of a leader. Providing the right resources, maybe budgets are tight, maybe there's others who disagree, and you know, providing the resources needed to get something done is key. And then running interference, keeping things out of the way, keeping stuff off the playing field that are neither the responsibility nor within the scope of power of the individuals who are working on the project. Now, again, I'm making corporate references, but this includes yourself. And this is a self-leadership piece I want to talk about here. Let's say you've decided to make a certain amount of money and you're putting in the hard work. The hard work might also include clearing your own mental obstacles. You know, I said part of it is sourcing materials and part of it's clearing the obstacles. Well, I've discovered in my own effort to create powerful goals that my own biggest enemy is me, my thoughts, my feelings, my self-sabotage, my I can't do this, not good enough, those, you know, disempowering thoughts that are there. And half the work, literally half the work, and sometimes more, is in that area. And half or less is in the actual completion of project steps. The ninth thing I wanted to talk about is the idea of contribution. People are way more excited about following you as a leader if they feel like they're doing something that matters, if they feel like they're making a worthy and worthwhile contribution to anything. Okay, so if they understand their place, what they are doing contributes to the completed project or product or whatever it is the organization or company is working on. So, for example, and I hark back to that musical theater stuff, ushers, people that set up chairs, making sure that they understand that their contribution is critical to the placement of the audience and the enjoyment of the audience, the leg room people had, whether or not people could move around, you know, get in and out for intermission, emergencies, all that kind of stuff. It was really important. And so you might say, well, setting up chairs, that's just some stupid grunt work. Not true. The layout of a room and all the rest has a lot to do with the full enjoyment of the situation. So helping people understand how their contribution matters to the whole is a very powerful hallmark of leadership. And taking the time to understand that and then to acknowledge those things is another critical characteristic of a leader in organizations large and small. Also in self-leadership, acknowledging your own efforts is key. That plays right into the last of our list, number 10. And I put three words here again, like I did with number two, joy, fun, and celebration. At the end of the day, you have projects, you have things that you want to do because you want some good outcome. You're going to rejoice in that promotion. You're going to rejoice in that new car. You're going to rejoice in that extra money or the vacation. You're going to rejoice if you've got that 50 pounds off, or if you've improved your relationship, or if you're, you know, you're at peace with how you are interacting with others, or you've overcome your fear of public speaking. You're going to have cause, real cause for celebration and joy. It's going to be fun. So allow it, plan for it. A leader that is effective, and this goes to self-leadership too, a leader that is effective understands what matters to the team members and provides for both recognition and celebration in a way that's consistent with what they value. So some members of the team, I can think of a certain circumstance, very introverted. So calling them up and recognizing them in front of the group was not going to be fun for them. A different kind of recognition really played into their who they are and really made them a loyal, valued, committed, dedicated, you know, member of the team. They got recognition and they got it in a way that was complimentary to them and not offensive. So understanding how to celebrate, how to recognize people, how to have fun along the way, interim milestones, goals, compliments, all of those kinds of things make so much difference. Just think of yourself. If you're busy doing something, it doesn't even matter what it is. And someone walks by and says, hey, that's really nice. That looks really good. That feels great. You feel acknowledged. You feel noticed. You feel seen. You feel like what you're doing matters. And after all, we live once through life. We all have the yearning to matter. And we all fear the acts of judgment and rejection. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of other things we could talk about discipline and correction and other things. And we don't have time on this episode. But focus on creating camaraderie, joy, a sense of shared accomplishment, celebration, having fun. All of those can be done in a contextually appropriate fashion, no matter what the project is. A personal project, you reach a milestone in your weight, celebrate. Not with a pile of ice cream, but some other appropriate celebration. A pile of ice cream might be just fine if weight isn't the issue and you just made your 27th commission sale as a real estate person this month. So your goals and your ability to recognize effort and celebrate yourself for self-leadership, team members for others, for other things, is critical. So many leaders that I have been associated with in my long career are only in it for what they look good for. You know, when something goes well, they can't wait to run and strut and take credit. And the team, yeah, that's just what you're supposed to do. Well, that doesn't contribute. That doesn't make for loyalty, and it doesn't make for long-term relationships. So I hope that you've enjoyed this brief discussion of 10 points of leadership today. I want to invite you to do three things. Number one, the URL on the screen, www.yourultimatelife.ca. If you haven't been there to get the five keys to create your ultimate life, I invite you to do that again. I further invite you to get a hold of me. I'd like to meet you. My business is meeting people, getting to know you, recognizing your divine gifts, your talents, your capabilities. So I'd invite you to do that. And I do that on every episode or nearly every one because I mean it. I love getting to know you and seeing beautiful faces. One of the most fun parts of my job, it's not a job, my choice of business and career is all the new people I get to meet and the amazing talent, skills that they each have. So I invite you to go to that URL. I invite you to reach out and connect so I can get to know you and what you do. And the third thing is if you have a story, a mission, a message that you would enjoy sharing with others, I would invite you to connect so we can talk about whether or not it would make sense for you to be a guest on this show or one of my other shows. Because again, this, my effort is about helping you achieve purpose, prosperity, and joy so that every day for you is fun, so that you can add your good to the world, so that together we can reach my goal of 250 million people to encourage them, to lift them, to love them, to bless them. We need that more than ever in our world today with the struggles and the negativity and the pain. Let's be part of the solution. Love to meet you. I extend those three invitations to you. And with all the love and encouragement in my heart, I tell you, it's possible. You can have it. So let's go create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.